Tape 118 and 119. Senate Committee on Revenue and School Finance. Agenda. Hearing Room 137, May 19, 1981, 1:30 p.m. Public hearing. House Bill 2212. In lieu of tax payment by waterfront property. Senate Bill 511. Tax credit for gift to Department of Transportation. Senate Bill 512. Tax credit for mass transit passes.
Order, Mr. Smith and Mr. Eggers. Pick him up mumbling.
I'm going to get
to
work.
How come you didn't bring your television cameras with you and everything?
That's what I said.
I went to some funny committee holding an F and it looked like a main event.
I had a better drawing card. It wasn't me.
What's going on out in the front room?
The UFO band trying to
playing
show
their
how
last
much
song.
They need some more general fund expenses.
Playing for the Last Supper at the legislature.
It's whether or not playing the fight song from the last football game. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Robert Smith, Director of the Executive Department. With me is Paul Egger, Economist Consultant to the Department. We're here today to present to you the final general fund revenue estimates for the 1979-81 and 81-83 biennium. Changes in this estimate from March 9. Estimates reflect changes in future economic assumptions, plus more reliable measure of the 1980 calendar year income tax yield. The general fund revenue estimates presented to you today show a less optimistic revenue picture than that included in the governor's printed budget and less optimistic than the March 9 estimates. The schedule attached to this testimony summarizes and displays information concerning our beginning balance for next biennium, which is now estimated to be 6.3, down nearly 11 million from the March 9 estimate, and that the current revenues to be collected during 1981-83 are now estimated at $2,928.5 million, down more than $75 million. These changes mean that our total general fund resources for 1981-83 are now estimated to have deteriorated from the March 9 estimate more than $86 million. Our potential 1981-83 deficit at this point, based upon existing law resources, has increased from $206.9 million in the March 9 report to $293 million. A combination of the increased revenues recommended by the governor and a further reduction of general fund expenditures by 3% that is now being recommended results in an ending balance for 1981-83 of $17.8 million. The attached chart also shows a refined estimate of the governor's recommended revenue increases for 1981-83 and that these increases are down by $2.0 million from the March 9 estimate. The revised estimate of $233.2 million, however, includes a new recommendation for improved general fund cash flow management, which will require introduction and passage of new legislation. Without this legislation during this session, the increased revenue package will produce $209.2 million. Mr. Chairman, you have requested, this committee has requested recommendations from the governor on what to do about our cash flow problem. And the summary information that I've just read to you summarizes those. I believe the governor's letter has been delivered to you. And we can, others can go into that in more detail, but it is picking several of those cash flow maneuvers that have been discussed in the staff report that you've had available to you. Now, the revised estimates being presented to you today show an ending balance of $17.8 million. This compares to a 2% prudent person reserve of approximately $63 million. In that first short memo that I've just read from, you will see the summary dollar comparisons that I've mentioned in my discussion. In addition to that, of course, are the standard revenue charts showing comparisons both for the current biennium and next biennium, reflecting our latest estimates and previous estimates. A short narrative discussing the changes and the reasons as we see them. In addition to that, we have a list of general fund reversions and a comparison of the amounts of the governor's revenue increase package as they've changed from the printed budget through the March 9 estimate to our latest estimate. I'll be happy to answer questions now on the general picture, Mr. Chairman, but if not, we can go to Paul, where he will discuss more specifically the revenue elements and the economic assumptions underlying those revenue estimates.
Okay, so in essence, revenues from all sources down about $86 million from the March 9th estimate.
Total. Yes, sir. Total resources over a three-year period, yes.
Okay. And $11 million of that is in this biennium?
Yes, sir. The difference between revenues and expenditures. We feel that expenditures are down a little bit. Our reversions are up a little bit from the previous March 9 estimate, but revenues are down even more for the current year's estimate.
And
most of that is in the estimated payment program that is not materializing as we estimated.
How much short is that from the $75 million that we projected?
We're estimating, I think it's $11
million. Well,
$17 million.
Like $17 million.
$17 million left.
Short?
Yes. Yes, sir. We have in the first payment just about $30 million, the last I heard, and we 31 now. It's still dribbling in, but it's virtually all in now. And the second payment is historically is usually lighter than the first payment. So
it is?
Yes.
Well, the Fed's got quite a lot less returns on the second payment than the first is always what we know. So I guess you have to assume that also means there's somewhat less money.
What about if that's down about $17 million, why wouldn't that $17 million be reduced from this biennium?
It is.
I thought you said it was 11.
I misspoke.
Okay.
The total change is 11 for the ending balance.
Okay.
But of the
$86 million, during what, are we just talking about 81, 83 biennium?
The total $86 million change you have to look on as a change in total resources for next biennium, which is the beginning balance for that biennium or the ending balance plus any changes in current revenue. So that.
How much are you down in revenue estimates for the next biennium?
Revenue estimates are down 75.2.
Okay. And you're down, you've had a ending balance adjustment of $11 million. Is that correct?
That's correct. Right.
The interest earnings and the cash flow problem. I'm interested in that I didn't know, I thought we were in essence trying to avoid the loss of revenue more than a large pickup of revenue. Now, if we take the steps recommended by the governor, and I can't remember, it seemed like we're talking about maybe a $200 million problem, weren't we? As a cash flow problem, of which he's recommending quarterly payments of corporate and personal income tax, basic school support distribution monthly instead of quarterly, and a 30% property tax spread into three payments instead of lump sum. That's going to net how much in increased revenue? The difference between 209 and maybe at $25 million. That's in interest earnings?
That's in interest earnings. But it doesn't show, that doesn't show anywhere separately on here, because that is part of the governor's program. And
we estimated the
interest impact.
It is mentioned on this on Schedule 3 in the information that you have.
Page 10?
Yes, sir. You can see in the far right column the change and the estimate the amounts of money that would be increased in effect for the changes by adopting the governor's recommendations on the entire revenue package, including the improved cash flow situation. So you can see by footnotes that we expect $24 million from increased income, interest income, from spreading those elements.
So your new revised final figures contemplate the passage of
others.
Mr. Eggers?
Well, all right.
That's what I was wondering about.
On the memo I wrote you, primarily the reasons for the changes in the assumption.
Which, where are you going to be now?
Where's your memo?
It starts on page 3 of the large package.
Okay.
3 on the bottom, you'll find.
I show you there some figures indicating the pickup in the national economy, which have not been reflected at the local level, either in our total or in our lumber industry employment. But the principal change for our revised estimate and change in assumptions are developments in the money markets since the beginning of April. I show you there a table that indicates how interest rates have changed over that period of time. That this jump in rates came as a result primarily of the release of data showing a rapid growth in money supply. To a considerable extent, the financial markets panicked when that data was announced. Also, the Federal Reserve has reacted by tightening up and running up the federal funds rate, which is the object of their day-to-day operation. Long-term rates also went up because they reflected higher inflation expectations when the first quarter real GNP change was announced, and that was again revised sharply upward today. So these are all factors that have run up interest rates. To a considerable extent, some extent I might say, we're in the situation almost where the better the national economy does at the moment, maybe the worse it is for us here, because all that seems to be doing at this stage is running up interest rates.
Okay, excuse me. The increased money supply,
yes,
is increasing interest rates.
Yes.
Now, at the national level, it's your contention that employment has recovered and is likely to continue?
Yes. Correct. Already has recovered.
How is our economy? I understand the timber and the sticks and the houses, but how is a more industrialized economy with 20% crime, how can we expect them to continue to employ and expand? Is that going to happen?
I think industry seems to be learning to live with high interest rates. I think the sort of interesting question you ask is what level of interest rates would it take really to stop the economy? And it looks like other than for housing and autos primarily, the rest of the economy has learned to live with high rates. I don't know how high they would have to go really to put the crunch on.
Okay.
But it does seem that business has learned to live with these rates.
Now, what can you give us an indicator of what's happened at the national employment figures? Is that that's not on here?
Yeah. It certainly has made up the losses of last year with quite a bit of extra compared to what we've managed to do. Now, up to this point, we're not in any trouble. If revenues for this year are going to come in as about we thought, the 1980 yield looks about right. The effects of these changes are going to start showing up. They haven't really impacted us in any surprising manner significantly up to this point, but I think obviously it does require a change in the estimate from here on out, and that's primarily what this memo is about and is really the reason for our lower revenue estimates.
Any other questions? Senator Day?
Well, you say that, you know, the economy has recovered, except in automobiles and maybe home building and lumber. People have learned to live with higher interest rates. People also, up to this point, aren't investing or going out in the market for unless they, all costs are avoiding capital expansion if they have to go out in the marketplace and borrow. There's only many times those large corporations in the marketplace are borrowing considerably cheaper than a smaller business person that's going in. They're still avoiding it unless it's something that is just essential. They're really, when you say they're learning to live with, they're learning to live without actually moving into expansion and what have you. They're consolidating or they're continuing at least their flows as they were. At least that's the thrust I see. I see no real grasping of the large financial institutions. Small business accounts have to go in the money market supply and borrow. And he's not gaining a discount from the others. They're not sought to it. We've seen more and more failures coming small inside, and yet they're the ones who suppose they are creating the greatest job expansion we have in the country. How do you reply to that?
Well, I think that probably the capacity that's in place, is considerably unused capacity, and business can continue to recover and increase employment for a considerable way yet without having to do any huge amount of investment.
Then a question of learning to live with it, they just aren't using it.
Well,
they
were certainly learning. They're certainly learning how to run their day-to-day operations. I mean, you would not have had the kind of increases in real GNP unless all the measurements are wrong. You would not have had the kinds of increase in real GNP employment that you've had if one way or another they weren't doing some coping.
Have you noticed in this expansion or this recovery, has there been a decrease in their debt service or an increase in it?
Well, I suppose there's probably a debt an increase, I think.
You don't know?
I couldn't give you an offhand answer.
Senator Monroe.
What you're telling us is that we have a national economy that's expanding, and that along with that expansion is an expansion in the money supply, and that the Fed is doing what it has traditionally done, at least in my lifetime, when there's an expanding money supply, and that is to treat it with an overdose of monetary policy, to raise interest rates. But that the interesting thing, what you're saying, is that it appears that raising interest rates isn't having much of a dampening impact on the national economy or even on the supply of money, because business people are becoming acclimatized to higher interest rates, learning to live with them. If that's the case, isn't it really true that those higher interest rates actually fuel inflation that they're supposed to dampen?
There is a line of reasoning that goes that way.
Do you think that line of reasoning has some validity?
Yes, I think so.
And of course, the end result of everything you're saying is that Oregon's economy is a lot more volatile with respect to high interest rates.
They're much more interest rate sensitive.
Yeah, sensitive. That's the word I wanted.
You know, this is basically a low interest rate economy.
Yeah.
Senator Monroe and I have told Mr. Volcker he ought to move over to the Army.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah. Mr. Volcker doesn't know, but Senator Monroe and I are coming back to straighten
out the Fed.
Good. Wouldn't be great.
Okay, why don't we go on to some of your other
take Rich
assumptions
along with
here.
Us, too.
Well, at the end of the memo, I've shown you some of the assumptions. Not all of these are really such low rates of change. The taxable income for 1982 is a fairly fairly hefty change of slightly over 13%. Wage and salary employment is...
That's down, isn't it?
It's
down from your original estimate.
Yes.
You were at 8.4 and 14.1, and now you're down to 13.1. You dropped that a percentage point, nearly a percentage point.
Where are you?
Page four.
So what effect did moving those both downward have on the personal income?
Well, they had the effect of primarily lowering what you see there is the change.
Lowering. Why is it increasing?
Well,
in 82?
I think that you're probably going to have basically the profits are going to hold up quite well. I mean, they probably will do fairly well in the recovery, and one may have underestimated in March.
Okay, when is the recovery? I forgot.
Well, let's say in 82, and profits probably can pick up, and some of the carryovers will end.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, and energy.
Probably food prices, housing, yeah, there's still prices. And you've got some movements in the other direction.
Okay, but you don't think if things start to thaw that you're not going to see giant increases in those prices? If interest rates would come down, if the Oregon economy would pick up in the second quarter of next year, you're not going to see the same phenomenon we saw when wage and price controls were taken off, and that is people, in order to get those profits back up, prices are increased to cover the costs of...
Well, these are national CPI figures. If you want a frame of reference, then probably these estimates tend to be on the low side of what the consensus is, but on the other hand, I would say the consensus has been steadily moving downwards.
Are any of these indicators adjusted substantially? You've got housing starts down from 1.35 to 1.25 in the first year, from 1.50 to 1.3.
Next year it'll be about just a little under $17. $4,000.
That's pretty high.
Well, that's with the $1.19 for the bond.
Okay. Is that just elementary?
No, it's through 12.
Oh. That's not bad.
That's not really too bad.
No, for doing all of that. I've seen elementary ones as high as 8 and 9 alone.
No, it's comparable with most of Multnomah County.
You ready for this?
Yeah. We're in here. One more witness. Okay. Thank you.
I take it back.
Get it quick, kid. It'd be worth it. Whoops.
Oh. Income coming. Oh, boy. These are deep spikes.
You've got to maintain your sense of humor down here. You go crazy.
I hope the job. I could hardly stay awake during the first portion of this. John,
do one of you two want to carry the Sotheby's Island?
It created, of course, during an energy crisis and during a period when most of the transportation systems were dismantled, was a terrible situation for moving people when you have a severe shortage of energy, when people have been dependent on individual energy sources. So that's really, I think, you have to think through. Sometimes, how can you rationalize subsidizing transportation? And I think you have to look at the reason that we make costs. We've traded one for the other. I think 512 and 511 and your fiscal staff could tell you what we've done. And really, I think we've traded maybe $15 to $20 million for $100,000. So I think it's a pretty good trade. So I leave the judgment and the wisdom of the committee.
You're wonderful. You're a calculator with Eastern Oregon. God damn it, get together with my wife.
I didn't know we had either one of them, but I like the way you traded one for the other.
I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, the whole purpose here is that if people that wanted to give gifts, you encourage them to give gifts, and the trouble is that just what probability we have and what that impact would be. Some significance of carrying the impact of which might be every little while.
Well, this particular unit, this SPV 2000, for instance, runs close to $1 million a unit now. But if we could operate them ourselves as a state and not have to use Amtrak.
Where would that go on SP? Could that go on the SP line?
Yes. Well, the SP doesn't like this particular unit for various safety reasons, they claim. But it's being used throughout the country.
How fast does it go?
It's capable of 120 miles an hour. But the track isn't that capable.
The track isn't good for it, is it?
I don't see a problem.
Could be.
Yeah, but they're maintenance today.
Well, there is a situation here where that's, you know, heavy freight train units are not passenger units, and they can operate at higher speeds, but they're not allowed to by law. There are 13 of these operating in Connecticut, or close to operational state. They've been running several on experimental basis in Connecticut. Well, that's my presentation.
Senator Monroe.
You're anticipating a 100% tax credit for these kind of contributions?
Well, there'd be no federal allowance. It would be strictly state, and no, there wouldn't be 100%. You couldn't. There'd be nobody in the tax bracket. Your fiscal staff could tell you how, for instance, $1 million contribution would work. You'd probably write it off. What do we allow? 3 years, Ron?
Yes, it is. 4 years. It can be carried forward.
Carried forward for 4 years.
Okay, but so if a person had a state tax liability, though, of, say, $50,000 a year.
Yes.
Be a very wealthy person, obviously, very wealthy, have an income, say, close to $1 million a year, and they had a state tax liability of $50,000 a year, they could contribute $50,000 a year to some transportation facility, and it would be 100% written off their state income tax.
That portion, yes.
How would you feel if we modified that somewhat, such as some other tax credits are, and allowed only a percentage tax credit, say 50%, so that if a person contributed $100,000, the maximum credit they could get would be $50,000.
Well, what are the wisdom of the committee, I'm sure.
The reason I ask the question is it appears to me that a person, a very wealthy person perhaps, that's in a high tax bracket, would have no disincentive but to do this. In other words, it wouldn't cost them a thing if they monitored their contribution properly to meet their tax liability. They could end up giving vast amounts of money to public transit, and it would cost them really nothing, which would, in effect, if we pass this bill, then we'd be making a public policy to put state general fund money into public transit. I support public transit, but it appears to me if we're going to give individuals the right to make those decisions for us, and that's what we would be doing, we ought to at least require them to put in some of their own money as well as putting in ours.
I think that would be my intent, and if you can make it work that way better. But that the idea was to give incentive to someone to do that. I think you should. I think you do recognize that the arts have been successfully doing this for years. Various museums who are allowed deductions have been doing this. We have a policy of allowing it. It's just that we don't allow it in transportation, the transportation area. The federal government has a long-standing policy for the arts to do that, and so does the state government.
Is that 100% credit for the arts?
Well, generally it doesn't amount to that because you're in a tax bracket. You see, the tax laws, and this is where Ron is going to have to correct me if I misstate myself, but it's my understanding, for instance, if you're in the 70% bracket, tax bracket, and if we're using the federal law to define state law, you can't get 100% return. You'd only get 70% of your money back.
Now that's a deduction, not a credit. When you're using tax credits, unless you define it as a percentage tax credit, it's 100% tax credit. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're talking about a deduction.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a deduction, and there's a difference between a deduction and a credit. I explain this to people all the time when I'm trying to get them to give me money. for my campaigns. So
I wrote a better bill than I thought I did, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, if the committee is interested in this bill, I would suggest that amendments be drafted to limit it to 50%.
Okay.
And I would agree to that.
Okay. We'll do that. What we're trying to do with all the tax credit bills, George, is to get them in the form that they would be passed out of the committee. And then we're not moving them out for obvious reasons right now. If we take this to the floor, you know, we sent the preacher bill back here. It's the one I'm giving everybody. Had a potential loss of earnings. No loss of tax liability, but a loss of interest earnings. And that was
$1,000.
No, it was 60, I think.
But, sapped.
And I don't think it'd be that much, but it was sent back. So I don't think we'll be successful until toward the end if we can develop some kind of a priority list of deduction and credit legislation, because you're aware of the report that the executive department handed out today, another $90 million down. And so it is.
Well, that's why I was willing, Mr. Chairman, to give you 15 to 20 this morning, just or this afternoon.
You're the best cow trader I ever heard. We have $20 million that we didn't know yet.
That's right.
We haven't given, but we got it back.
We got it back.
Yeah, we got it back. Zap.
You gave it to the committee. Yeah.
You've got two horses that he wants. He'll trade you one for the other one.
Yeah, you got it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Roger Martin, do you still want to testify on table Senate Bill 512?
Chairman, no. I'm very sad that the Oregon Trans Association is trying to make peace with Senator Wingard. We had some battle with a couple weeks ago. Unanimously decided to support Senate Bill 512. We met for several hours, did a lot of research. Heard this testimony. The bill's been tabled. And I have a problem trying to get rid of the papers.
So you want to be paid anyway. So you won't be lying when you said you testified. Okay, this committee, what is the day? Tuesday? We'll meet tomorrow at 1:30.